frame to complement your features and work with your particular lenses. With so many choices, that's all the more reason to enlist the help of an experienced optician. Come to Keller & George Optical, Millmont Street.
And now we're pleased to bring you our feature presentation.
Five thirty-six on the clock. I hope you're having a wonderful Tuesday afternoon. Coy Barefoot with you this afternoon. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk with the Attorney General of Virginia, Bob McDonnell, and a downtown fixture of Charlottesville, Sandy McAdams of the Daedalus Bookshop, live in studio. Local author and historian Rick Britton joins us. We try for about once a week, and sometimes we do that.
Yeah.
I appreciate you changing your schedule around so you could come today.
That's
all right. Folks aren't used to hearing you on a Tuesday afternoon. Thank you for coming in. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Man, talk about a heat wave, huh? Is that crazy?
Is that something? Yeah.
I was baking driving in. I mean, you don't want to hit a stoplight because then you're just going to sit there and bake.
It reminds me of when I lived in Tampa, Florida. I had this little tiny old Buick, and it had no air conditioning.
Yeah.
And it was just brutal. I mean, you know, I wore dress shirts, and they were just dripping sweat.
Yeah.
And it's like this at like 8 in the morning, you know? And down there, it's just unbelievable, the heat and the humidity. Anyway, it does feel like that. That's what I was thinking earlier when I was walking around. Like, gosh, this feels like Tampa.
One time I took a flight to Brazil, and I ended up landing at an airport. It was right on the Amazon, so it was right near the equator. In the middle of the night, I think it's Belém, And we got out of the plane in the middle of the night, and it was still like 100 degrees in the middle of the night. So you stepped out of the plane. You know, there was AC on the plane. You stepped out of the plane. You were just instantly soaked.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Man. And you've been going there a long time because your family's from Brazil, right?
No, my mother's from Argentina.
Argentina, that's right.
But I lived in Brazil for quite some time. My dad did too. He stayed there for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And he lived in the northeast of Brazil, so I used to go down to visit him.
Do you still speak fluent Portuguese?
I can speak
Portuguese.
That's
impressive.
Yeah,
Good for you.
Portuguese is a really beautiful language, and I love their music. I mean, I think of all the Latin American cultures, Brazil has the best music. I mean, except maybe for the tango. Mexican music, the stuff with the accordions and the horns and stuff, I don't get at all. We get these Spanish language stations, and so I watch for a while. I just don't get that stuff at all.
Doesn't do it for you, huh?
No, it doesn't do it.
So what is it
about? A lot of people like it.
What is it about Brazilian music? That's where they do the carnival, right?
I think the difference is the African influence, to the samba. And I don't know. I really think it's the African influence.
You know, when I think of Brazil, I always think about something that I know you've written about. If not, there's definitely a book here and a movie. I wish somebody would make a movie about this.
About what?
After the Civil War,
right?
The Confederates who refused to be a part of America,
right?
There were like what, thousands of them
who actually went to Brazil
to create the Confederate state in Brazil.
Yeah, there was at least two different batches that I know of. One group went up the Amazon and disappeared. And years later, an expedition went up looking for them and found natives there. Now, we're talking about way up the Amazon, natives with blue eyes and blonde hair. So, obviously, these folks had settled.
It's like
and
the Roanoke
mixed.
Colony.
Right. And then a bunch of them went to the state of São Paulo and founded the town of Americanas. And the big thing that they did in Americanas was in that area is growing cotton. So these people got into cotton. And to this day in Americanas, they celebrate Confederate Memorial Day.
That's amazing.
Because the people down there are all descended. You know, the major families are still descended from the Southerners, the expatriate Confederates
who refused to submit to the government of Lincoln.
A lot went to Mexico. A lot went to Egypt because at the time,
whoever
was in charge in Egypt was at war. And so a lot of the Confederate generals who didn't want to stay went to Egypt and became generals in the Egyptian army.
Wow.
A lot went to Canada. They went
the
all over the world.
Confederate Exodus.
You know, actually, that would be a great book, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Confederate Exodus. It'd be a great documentary, a good book, coffee table book.
Yeah,
and
it's
just
pretty interesting.
Sort of follow where some of these people went and manifestations of their existence today, because I'm sure there's somebody somewhere in Egypt flying a Confederate flag.
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
a descendant.
Yeah, Yeah, isn't that strange?
Yeah, that is. Rick Britton live in studio, and the phone lines are always open for you folks at 977-1070. What are we talking about today? I thought we were talking about the cemetery.
Well, we're finishing up on the cemetery. There are a couple of folks. You wanted to mention one family that was buried there. Was that the McKinney family?
The McKinney family. That was the guy that started the first newspaper in Charlottesville
right.
in the early 1820s. Jefferson used to write press releases for UVA when they were building it and send it to him and say, put this in your new newspaper and let folks know how we're spending their public money.
Was that
I want
the Chronicle?
Them to know.
What was the name of that paper? Was that the Chronicle?
The Charlottesville Chronicle. I think that was
uh-huh,
it.
That
yeah,
sounds
the
right.
first newspaper.
Right.
It only lasted a few years, and then it morphed into something else. But the McKinney family, he started that. He also had the university bookstore at the corner.
Right.
And
right.
there were four generations of McKinneys who had businesses at the UVA corner in the 19th
wow.
century.
Wow.
And then, of course, one of them was Marcellus McKinney.
Marcellus McKinney, right. Who ended up manufacturing sabers, swords and sabers for the Confederate Army.
Yeah, and that's what
and
the
was
generals
like a colonel
all
of a local
wore
militia
their,
unit. Yeah, uh-huh.
On their belts there.
That's right.
Yeah, so there were four generations of McKinneys who were business owners at the UVA corner. That has never been matched. If Mark Mentzer, if his son or one of his children
oh
ends up working on the UVA corner, that will be four generations.
The Mentzer legacy.
But right now, Mentzer is just three generations. so we'll see about that. But and Crafax has two generations working at the UVA corner, but nobody has beat the 19th century McKinney family, but they're buried in the UVA cemetery, and I've always thought that was interesting because they were never affiliated with UVA.
Right, but they were important to the university community.
Right,
and that's
right.
That's what made the difference, right?
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
selling books to the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and so
that's
it's
kind of important.
It sort of points out the fact that university cemetery, we often think of it as a place for professors and students, some
well,
students.
And their families.
And their families.
Right.
When in fact, originally, it was a real community cemetery that weren't necessarily for
right.
faculty members. It
right.
was, you know, the bookstore owner at the corner is buried there, that kind of thing.
And it's important when you say community because what it means to me is people need to remember that the university community was separate from Charlottesville. They were a mile apart. And
yeah.
for a long time, there was hardly anything in between. You know,
yeah,
and it was
yeah.
that way on purpose to keep them separate. So that was University of Virginia, had its own post office.
Its own train depot, its own
right.
Grocery stores,
right.
a totally
right.
separate until 1916 when it was swallowed up by the expanding city, although
mm-hmm.
not the grounds of the University of Virginia.
Right.
Those are technically in Albemarle County.
Right.
Not in the city of Charlottesville.
Right.
Very interesting.
Right. It is really interesting. Another guy that's over there, we're talking about the McKinneys, but another guy who's over there that kind of segues into the next thing that we wanted to talk about is William Holding Eccles Jr., who was known as Reddy Eccles, and he took an engineering degree here at the university, and then he came back. He went off and worked for railroads, and he came back in 1891 to teach mathematics, but he also became a superintendent of building and grounds, and buildings and grounds, and he's the guy who had a lot to do with the Rotunda fire at the university, and one of the most famous stories, that fire took place in 1895. But do you want to do the quiz right now?
You got a quiz?
Yeah, I got a quiz question. We're
going to
talk about the Rotunda for the next few minutes. So I wanted to ask, the university Rotunda is a scaled-down version of what Roman structure?
Of what Roman structure? If you
That's
think
right.
you know, 977-1070, we will give you some Papa John's Pizza and a downtown tour book, history guide tour book, a self-guided walking tours. And 977-1070, if you think you know, what's the question again?
The University Rotunda, the UVA Rotunda, is a scaled-down version of what Roman structure?
A scaled-down version of what? Because
it's half the size.
Yeah, because Jefferson would get these big architecture books.
That's
and,
right.
And
by
sort of,
Andreo Palladio.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to
you
the
have
phones.
A caller? Great.
Yeah. Caller, what's your first name?
Hello?
Hey.
Calling about the answer to the question?
Yeah, what's your first name?
Peter.
Peter.
Hey, Peter.
What's the celebrity you most resemble, Peter?
I don't think I do.
No celebrity at all?
I don't think so.
Nobody ever said, hey, Peter, you look just like so-and-so.
No.
Oh, that's too bad. Peter, what's the answer? You know what the Rotunda is modeled after?
The Pantheon?
Absolutely right. The Pantheon in Rome.
The
yep.
Pantheon. Let's give him one of these.
Fantastic.
Way
good
to
job,
go, Peter.
Peter.
Good job. Hold on just a minute, and Matt will tell you how to get your prizes. We'll give you, some Papa John's pizza and a downtown tour book.
The Pantheon in Rome, of course, Pantheon means all the gods. So it was a temple to all the gods. And the modern version, we just looked this up, dates to 125 A.D. You know, and Jefferson, in his construction of the University of Virginia, as you know, of course, Coy and Monticello, his architectural mentor was Andrea Palladio. And so using Palladio's sketchbooks, he was able to model Monticello and the University of Virginia after these Roman, Greek and Roman structures, and accurately represent all the different orders of Greek and Roman architecture.
Yeah, yeah. And what's interesting in the design of the University of Virginia, his original design didn't call for some main historical, grand
central
building.
Central focus.
It
right.
actually called for three long sides.
Right, right.
Instead of two long sides and a short end.
But then he wrote to a fella up in Washington, D.C., who was an architect by the name of Latrobe, yeah. and asked for suggestions. And the sketch still exists that Latrobe sent to Jefferson. And it shows, the lawn edges, the east and west lawn, on either side of a large central building that would become the focus, that would become the library.
Yeah.
And Jefferson, took his suggestion and ran with
it. Interesting, though, folks may not know that that wasn't Jefferson's idea originally.
Right.
He had the idea, we'll have three very long sides, but the land that they could get to build the university on didn't lend itself to that type of design.
That's right, because it's a long ridge that drops off precipitously on either side. So you've got a fairly narrow space to work on there.
Right, right.
You don't think about it when you assume that everything was just preordained this way, but it was kind of tough.
Yeah, yeah, to make it fit up there on that
but
ridge.
But this brings up a really great point about Jefferson. Is Jefferson the adapter? I love to think of him this way, as the great adapter, adapting other men's words, adapting other men's ideas. I think he'd be the first person to admit this. He didn't always have the answer, but he knew what book to go to, and he knew who to ask to get the answers.
Yeah.
And he was a willing adapter. And in this case, he adapted Latrobe's idea.
Right, right. Right. And just an expert at saying, okay, that's how they did it hundreds of years ago.
That's right.
How can we make it work now?
That's right.
You know.
But there's so many great stories in the construction. Of course, the Rotunda was the last building completed of the original ones that Jefferson designed on the grounds of the university. And of course, it wasn't completed until September of 26. So Jefferson had been dead for 2 months, so he never really saw it as a totally completed work. Another great story is of the first dinner they had, the first ceremony they had in the dome room of the Rotunda, and of course that was in November of 1824. It was uncompleted, of course, and that was for Lafayette. And Jefferson, of course, along with Madison, had to escort Lafayette to the University of Virginia, had to show off his academical village. And so, you know, most of the buildings along the lawn had been completed. And so the crowd was arrayed along those and on the roofs of those buildings as they alit at the very southern end. We have to remember that the southern end of the lawn was open, which I think would still be nice. But anyway,
yes.
So they got
And that was the main entrance.
That's right. So they got off the carriage down there, basically where the newer Cabell Hall is. It's about 100 years old now, and then the three of them walked up the middle of the lawn to the rotunda, and you know, the people were just going nuts. And there's a great account by a reporter from the Fredericksburg newspaper that's just hundreds and hundreds of words long. It's great, and he talks about how, you know, here comes Jefferson, you know, on one side, Lafayette in the middle, and Madison on the other side. So he talked about the hero of the Revolution and two of its sages walking up the lawn. And when you think about this, you know, one of the guys who helped kind of seal the end for Cornwallis at Yorktown in that campaign here in 1781, the final campaign of the American Revolution, and, you know, the author of the Declaration and the father of the Constitution all walking together. It was pretty amazing.
Gosh, that gives you chills, walking up the lawn.
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
So the crowd just went nuts. And then, of course, they had a few speeches from the south portico to the crowd assembled. And then they retired for a while, and then eventually went upstairs to the dome room. And according to the reporter for the Fredericksburg paper, they had 400 people for this dinner in the rotunda. You know, all of the important families here from Charlottesville and Albemarle County, Jefferson, Madison, Lafayette. And they said that the meal was excellent. They arranged the 400 folks, the tables were in concentric circles, and they said that the different courses were excellent, especially the meat. And of course, it came time at the end for people to present toasts. and they gave toasts around, and then it came to Mr. Jefferson. I love telling this story. Jefferson at the time was suffering from an inflammation of the throat, and so he wasn't able to actually speak, but he had written a few words, and he handed it off, his words, to a Mr. Gordon, who stood and delivered them for everybody, and he went on about how he wanted Americans to understand that Lafayette had not just been a great general in the American Revolution, had not just helped us that way in bringing in the French and ending the war, but when Jefferson had been minister plenipotentiary to France after the war, it was Lafayette who had helped him arrange all of those very lucrative trade agreements between France and this young nation that really helped the farmers of America.
And opened up our economy.
And opened up our economy. But then he came back to the Revolution, and his last words were, "When it came to the Revolution, I but held the nail, and he drove it."
Wow.
So, like, putting in the final nail of Cornwallis's coffin there in 1781.
And when was
I love that quote.
Rick Britton is my guest online at rickbritton.com.
That was November 5th, 1824. And so that was the first official ceremony held.
So just about, a couple of years, 2.5 years before Jefferson died?
Yeah.
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 Well,
July less than 2 years.
A year and a half then,
right.
July of 1826.
Right.
And the building wasn't even yet completed.
Wasn't completed yet, but they had a grand old time. Of course, there had been some other great ceremonies. There was a ceremony there for Mikhail Gorbachev when he came to speak at commencement. There was a ceremony there, I think it was 30 years ago, for the Queen Mum. When she came, of course, there's some other great stories too. That, you know, there were some riots while Jefferson was still alive. You know, some of the first batches of students he was not all that happy with.
Rowdy boys.
there were some rowdy boys, and they were fond of riding on the lawn. They weren't happy with the European professors, of course.
Yeah,
Six of the first eight professors were Europeans. That didn't quite sit with these Southern boys.
And understandably so, because these
kids, I think so.
Their fathers, grandfathers, uncles, I mean, these were people who had fought or funded the War of 1812. Britain was the enemy to these kids.
And as I've seen explained so many times, if you expect Europeans at that early date, you know, we're talking about 1825, if you expect Europeans to teach the principles of the American Revolution and republicanism, you're really kind of asking too much.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit too early.
But Jefferson wanted those teachers because he said
these are
the best.
Well, because he had to have the best. Right. In everything, Jefferson had to have the best.
Right.
And so
whether he could afford it or not.
That's right. That's why he died $107,000 in debt.
Yeah.
So if you can't find the best here, obviously you have to go to Europe to get the best.
And he got them, and they came. Amazing that they did. Amazing that they would come.
It is amazing.
To the outpost.
But that's one of the reasons he built such an amazing university, you know, and it's considered one of the finest, as far as the original grounds, one of the finest campuses anywhere in the United States, architecture-wise. And the Rotunda, by American architects, is often rated as one of the 10 most beautiful buildings in the entire country.
Can you imagine coming out here?
Like, I know, in the middle of nowhere.
They didn't even have trains yet.
Right.
I mean, they wouldn't have trains for, you know,
another generation.
30 or 40 years.
Right.
Coming out here in a boat or by horse.
And seeing classical buildings.
Coming out in the wilderness at the top of a ridge and the trees clear in part. And you see the University of Virginia back in the 1820s. It must have just been stunning.
Absolutely
stunning. I mean,
it's stunning
today. But
stunning was the word that I was thinking. Absolutely stunning. But anyway, there was this riot. And so they sent the word out for Jefferson. And he came down. He rode down on his favorite horse from Monticello, and they brought in a bunch of the students, and the idea was Jefferson was going to talk to them and try to get the ringleaders to step forward. They brought in a chair for Jefferson, and at first he was going to stand and talk to them, but he was so overcome by emotion that he sat down in the chair and couldn't even speak. And as the story goes, the ringleaders of this riot, they were so moved by seeing the author of the Declaration and the ex-president sitting there crying that the eight of them stepped forward and said, I got everybody else to do this.
Right.
Yep.
Rick Britton, online at rickbritton.com, local author, historian, cartographer. Thank you so much, Rick.
You're welcome. Enjoyed it.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com. Y'all have a great night.
For over 50 years, UVA Community Credit Union has been helping members of the community meet their financial